We started yesterday considering the question of what would the liability be, or would there be liability, if somebody would be mazik something, and it's not something that you can assess its value by looking at the marketplace. You can't just sell it in the open market and get a normal price for it. And we noted that there are at least two different ways, probably more, but at least two different ways this can come up, and there may be distinctions between them. One is something which has a significant replacement cost, but that's different than the cost of what it would carry if you tried to sell it. So if somebody breaks your glasses, that's the example we keep coming back to, then you're going to have to spend a lot to get new ones, but they're not valuable in the sense that you could sell them. There's also the question of something which has sentimental value. So there, the value again doesn't translate into selling value. It's not something that you can put on the market, put on eBay, and expect to get anything of significance. And yet, clearly the victim, the would-be seller, had suffered a loss from what happened. So let's consider a few questions here. So one question that's a topic of debate among the Achronim is there a chiyuv for a mazik if somebody damages something which the victim would not otherwise be able to sell? Is he chayiv? So here, this is a machlokas Achronim. And just to name the players here, the Nesivis and the Ketzos, in a rare moment of harmony, they both agree that you cannot hold a mazik liable for that. But many other poskim disagree.
Hi. Again, it's that they're not liable to pay for anything more than just the face value, the market value of that?
Yeah, presumably. Or maybe not. Let's say something you can't sell at all, which there are things like that. So then there's no chiyuv at all. Right. So one of the proofs, for example, question about that? Yeah? Yes. Well, maybe the things we're talking about might be an example. Let's say, for example, a family picture, which essentially has no value to anyone outside your family. No offense, wonderful family, but just, I would say this to anyone in the room. But it doesn't have any value in the marketplace. But to you, if it was your only copy and it wasn't digitized, you know, that would be, which I guess it gets harder and harder to imagine nowadays. We digitize everything, so this whole model starts to fade away, but still possible to have such things. So, and we still put a lot of faith and a lot of value in the original, or let's say a document, a letter, certainly we still put a lot of value in the original. So maybe that has essentially zero market value, and yet there's still a loss to the Nizak. Shmuley?
How does this play into the stamp example we said before? Let's say the stamp is worth technically only 55 cents, but it's really worth $100,000. So what would they say in this case?
Right, so here, this is that you're referring to Rav Zilberstein's Svara, right, which you mentioned was very Mechudish Svara, because it's hard to break those things into two categories, because value really should be dependent on what people will pay for it. So here, well, your question is then, so okay, if there we are assuming that the value is determined purely what people will pay for it, so does that mean that, okay, there's no value here because people won't pay anything for it, and case closed?
Or the opposite, the person would pay actually a lot of money to have that photo.
Who the victim would pay. Right, but the victim is not the one who establishes the market price. Right, so it's an interesting question. So one proof, or one case that the Nesivis focuses on is the Gemara in Bava Kamma, which maybe you saw. It appears also in the Ksuvis. And the case of, let's say, somebody tries to claim that a woman shouldn't get her Ksuba. Why? Because they claim that she was already divorced and received the Ksuba. So essentially they're trying to deprive her of the Ksuba, when really she's happily married, and someday she may not be happily married, and then she should have the right to her ksuba. So essentially, you have these edim who try to claim that she doesn't get the ksuba. They try to make her lose the ksuba. The edim zomim case. And so we know that the edim zomim, normally their punishment is they have to pay for the loss they try to make the other person endure. So what's the case here? What do they have to pay for? So it's not the value of the ksuba because she's not actually divorced right now. It's an interesting discussion from a later svarim. What happens if she gets divorced later and then wants to be to pay them? That's a different discussion. But right now she doesn't have any monetary value. So the Gemara discusses maybe we should say that we should count the value based on her tovas hana. Meaning what? That we should say she could sell the ksuba to someone else. And that person would then have a lottery ticket. That if it turns out that she gets divorced or her husband dies, so then this becomes valuable and they could cash in the ksuba. So maybe somebody will pay for a gamble, essentially. Obviously, they're not going to pay the full value of the ksuba because that would make no sense. They'll pay some small amount to be able to have this card they can cash in if it turns out to come up. Hi.
The Gemara seems to imply that it's a small amount.
Right.
But why would it be so small? I mean, isn't it kind of like 50-50 whether she dies first or her husband dies first?
It's also, but it's also the time value of money, right? You have no idea how long it's going to take.
Is that a concept back then?
Sure, it's always a concept. It was a concept that causes the whole issue of ribbis also, but theoretically, it's certainly a reality, right? The people would rather have money earlier than later. So even if you was a vaday, how much would you pay now for something that you don't know if it'll come in for another 30 years? So that's one question. Then put on top of it that it's 50-50. So it's a pretty small amount. So that's what the Gemara says. That's what the cost was to her. Now, the Gemara then goes on. This is a little complicated. The Gemara then goes on to say that it's actually an open question who should get that money. Should the husband get that money or should the wife get that money? Because all value that's coming to her, or much value that comes to her, goes to the husband anyway. So maybe it's really the husband's schus. So this tovas hana, the ability to sell the ksuba, should that be considered her loss or his loss? So the Gemara says it must be. You see from this whole discussion that it's her loss. It would have gone to her. Because otherwise, if it would have gone to him, then the Edom can say, well, we didn't cost you anything. Like, because even if you had some value here, the value would have gone to your husband anyway. This is a very complicated proof. So just we'll say it, and then we'll take a question. So the Nesiv is saying here that what do you see? That the only value that is measurable here is what the woman would get for selling the right to the ksuba, right? Not the actual payoff, because that's a question. So it's just the only way to translate it into money is if she could sell it to some third party, whatever that price is. But why don't we say, no, that's not the only value there is here. What's this guy buying? This third party who would pay her money for this, what's he buying? Like Jacob was saying, he's buying a lottery ticket. He's buying something that may turn out to have value. So she already has that, right? She already has a ksuba that may turn out to have value. So if it's valuable for this guy to buy it, so she already has it. So if the Edom tried to deprive her of that, they tried to deprive her of value. You hear it? It's a very complicated point, so I'll be happy to say it again. So yeah, it's very, very complicated, so I'll be happy to say it even three times. 101 times. Okay, so here's the story. The Gemara is trying to figure out, is there any loss to this woman, any potential loss to this woman from what the Edom did? Right? Because the Edom should be penalized with what they tried to do to her. So that's what they should pay. So what did they try to do to her? They tried to take away her ksuba. And she's a married woman right now. So right now the ksuba is not actualized into any money. So they tried to take away her ksuba. What is that worth? So it's not worth the ultimate value because that's not what we're holding right now. So the Gemara says the only way we can measure it is let's figure like this. She could sell this. There's got to be a stock market term for this. I don't know if we call it a short or a long or a hedge or something. There's got to be some word for this, that what they do on the market. So she could sell the right to the ksuba to some outside party. An option. Okay, she could sell the option to Mori, right? Just because Mori is a ksuba investor, right? People do this with life insurance policies. Right? You know, people buy other people's life insurance policies and then they collect on them, right? So,
you have that person killed.
Right, exactly. Right, so let's say somebody, and they can really talk about Nizikin and Grumma, but let's say somebody does this with ksubas. Somebody decides they'll go around buying up ksubas. And then if the marriage comes to an end in divorce, or if the husband dies first, he'll cash in. Right? There are women who are looking for some extra cash, so they'll get the cash right now by selling the option to their ksuba to some outside investor, and he'll cash in if it ends up being worth something. So Maury potentially could buy it. That's how we figure out the value. We ask Maury, what would you pay for this ksuba that may or may not pay off, may or may not be within the next 40 years, what would you pay? We come up with a number, that's the number. So the Gemara says, well, if that's what we're talking about, we can see from here that that value is exclusively to the wife. It's not one of the things that the wife acquires and goes to the husband. Because if it were, then she didn't lose anything. And the Edom will say, I didn't make you lose anything. The money that Maury would have paid would have gone to your husband anyway. Okay? So far, so good? So says the Nesivis, so then she has nothing? But it's not true, because it was worth something, because Maury would have paid for it. So let's say Maury would have paid, whatever, $100 for this ksuba. So there's a $100 value. What would he have gotten for his $100? He would have gotten this lottery ticket, the potential payoff someday. So she has that lottery ticket, right? She has this, the same item that maybe for her someday will materialize. So she has $100 worth of value. So why don't we say that's the number? It doesn't matter what would have happened if she would have sold it, would have gone to her husband, or would have gone to her. The fact is, she has it. So therefore, that's what they tried to deprive her of. They tried to deprive her of $100 of value. So says the Nesivis, what do you see from here? You see that it's crucial that she has to be able to sell it. That if she could sell it and get the money, so then that was a damage to her. But if she can't sell it, because if she sells it, the money's going to go to her husband anyway. So it doesn't help that she has it right now. That means she has it and she can't sell it. If she has it and she can't sell it, it doesn't count. That's the Nesivis' position, basically. Hi.
So in this entire episode, then, where's the potential hefsid for the husband?
The potential hefsid for the husband in terms of the ksuba?
Yeah.
So maybe it is. So then maybe he should be able to come and claim it. And that's an interesting question. But the Tovos Hanah maybe was his, if that was the conclusion. But the Gemara ultimately says it wasn't his anyway. You see from here that it was hers. And there isn't any potential loss to the husband.
So, hi. Maybe the argument that they didn't cause him any loss because it's a ksuba that he would have had to pay?
Maybe. Yeah, but we didn't get that far anyway. It didn't come up. So that's Nesivis' position. Now, it happens to be that a lot of Achronim disagree with this for various reasons. And they don't think this is necessarily correct. Reb Zalman Nechemi Goldberg Shlita, who's one of the great Gedolim of our era, has an article about this in Tchumen. I don't know if you ever read Tchumen. Tchumen is a very fine journal that comes out of Tzomet in Israel. It has many wonderful articles, but among its great qualities is that pretty much every issue has a article written by the Garzon, by the Gaon of Zalman Nechemi Goldberg. If you're familiar, is really one of the great Gedolim of our time, the son-in-law of Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. So he has an essay about this in one of the earlier issues of Tchumen. And he disagrees with Nisivas, as does others. And he says that maybe there the whole issue is that you both have an intangible, and it's also a suffix whether it even has any value. Because maybe it may never turn into anything. So then you really don't have too much to hang on to. But what if you have something, like a picture, which maybe you can't sell, but it has value to you? We don't have to derive its value from any potential future scenario. The value is that you want it, and it means a lot to you. So maybe that's not comparable. And maybe it's not all about being able to sell it. It's important to be able to sell it if it doesn't have any other value. But if it has its own independent, even emotional value, then maybe we don't care so much that you should be able to sell it. Hi.
So is that sort of saying that the value that would be worth in the sale could potentially in some way be the same, not the same, but equally value with reference to like my, you know, let's say the family picture, for example, it means a lot to me, but like just because it's not sellable on the market doesn't mean that it might not be worth something.
Yeah, that's essentially what he's saying. He's saying that we don't have a proof from here that the only thing we recognize is market price. In the case of the ksuba, market price is the only potential source of its value, without it being sold somewhere and without it turning into a definite activation, then it doesn't have any value. But the picture has its own value because of its sentimental importance. So then maybe that's called a value and you don't need to come on to being able to sell it. There are a few other Gemaras that are invoked to try to figure this out, which hopefully by now you've seen. So one is the concept of, it's Machlokas in the Gemara, of Goreim Mamon Kemamon Dami. That there we're talking about something causes money, but we really mean a monetary expenditure. So let's say, for example, I'm a shomer on a shore. And while it's under my authority, it gores somebody and now it's gotta be stoned. So it's a shor haniskal. So now it's really worthless. So I can't sell it. No one can sell it. But problem is, it still belongs to the original guy who I took it from, who I agreed to watch it for. So I have to return it to him. If I don't return it to him, I'm going to have to pay him for it, even though I can't sell it. So what if somebody now steals it from me? So what did he steal from me? He stole a shore that is worthless, but it's going to saddle me with a big bill because I can't give back the shore now to the original owner. I'm in trouble. So that's called a goreim mamon. The situation causes me to have to pay money. In the later svarim, by the way, there's a question how you translate this. Does this mean the situation is goreim mamon? Or does it mean the object is viewed as the goreim mamon? But for our purpose, it doesn't have to matter so much. But somebody putting me in a scenario where now I have to pay, it's gorei mamon, so is that kamamon dami or not? So that is a machlokas in the Gemara. Now one question to consider is this the same thing as garmi? So Tosas raises the question that it doesn't sound like it is the same thing as garmi. Because Reb Meir is the one who holds Doin Dina de Garmi, that we do adjudicate Garmi. Again, Garmi is a scenario which is causational, but it's a little bit more of somebody's direct responsibility than a normal grama. And we do obligate him to pay, but it's a machlokas whether he pays midrabanan, midaraisa, whether it's mammon or knas, all kinds of details. So Reb Meir is the one who we know does endorse Dina de Garmi. And the Gemara doesn't just make the connection. The Gemara doesn't just say, okay, Rav Meir holds Dina de Garmi, so he l'shitaso also holds Davra Garim Lamama. Apparently there's a difference between them. So the assumption that they're not the same, that you could hold one and not the other, Tosfos in Bava Kamma tries to figure out what the difference is. And Tosfos says also that Gorim Lamamon has to be something which is usable by everyone and can be sold. So it sounds like, again, like this can be sold element is crucial. Or so that Garmi, rather. That's like the Garmi has to be something that can be used by everyone and can be sold. So it sounds like that, once again, this ability to sell is crucial. And the Ksos, like we said before, the Ksos is on the team of the Nesivis. The Ksos picks up on that and says, again, if you can't sell it, then it's not subject to Dinei Nezikin, including Garmi. Okay, so far so good? This is complicated stuff, by the way, just for the record. So I'm happy to explain it 101 times. So if... Sorry? Okay.
That's taking a step further. So it's saying that it's not... If it can't be sold,
mm-hmm.
the Torah means it has a value of the shuk, then how that takes him out of the parasha of Nezikin altogether? That's
what he's assuming. Now, again, we saw Achronim disagree with this, but he's assuming, based on this idea, that because he's asking, Tosfos is asking first, what's the difference between Garmi and Davra Garim Lamama? Apparently there's a difference, because the Gemara doesn't assume that they line up, so why not? So this is one difference Tosfos suggests. We'll see in a second. There's a couple of answers Tosfos suggests. That may not be the only one. But that's one possibility, and the Ksos seizes on that and says, okay, so here it's not going to count unless it's something you can sell. Sam? Very happily. Yeah, the question is, Davar HaGorim L'mamon, this idea of somebody steals your Shor HaNiskol, so it sounds like that's similar to Garmi, right, where you cause somebody a loss. And if that's the case, why does the Gemara not connect them? Why doesn't it say that Reb Meir in both places is L'shitoso? He holds from Garmi, and he holds, therefore, from Gorim L'mamon also. So Tosfos assumes they're different. They don't always line up. You can hold one and not the other. So why would you hold, for example, Garmi? You're liable for Garmi, but you're not liable for the Shor HaNiskol case. What's the difference? So one answer Tosfos gives is that Garmi applies to things that are applicable to everyone and can be sold. Unlike Shor HaNiskol, which is only relevant to this one guy who was unlucky enough to be watching somebody's shore when it turned into a Shor HaNiskol and then got unlucky enough again that somebody stole it from him. So his situation isn't relevant to anyone else. He's the one who needs it to not get in trouble for not returning it. But there's no relevance to any other person. And that's not comparable to Garmi. Garmi is where you cause indirectly a damage to something that could be relevant to others and could be sold. So the Ksos seizes on that idea. Okay, so it's got to be able to be sold. If you can't sell it, then we don't even apply Garmi. So far, so good. Again, happy to say it 101 times because these are complicated Gemaras, very complicated. So Garmi is especially relevant because the Gemara also has a discussion, is also on the list, about what happens if somebody burns someone else's shtar. If somebody has a shtar that records a debt that is owed to them, and a third party burns the shtar. How do you assess that? The shtar doesn't really have inherent value. The shtar is important because it what allows this guy to collect the debt. But the shtar itself is not a valuable item that you put up for auction. So the Gemara has two possibilities. Either you believe in Garmi or you don't. If you believe in Garmi, so then, okay, that much is true here. The shtar is not inherently valuable, but it causes the person to not be able to get his debt. So it's a Garmi case. And if you believe in Garmi, so then fine, the whole debt that represents, that's represented by the shtar, that's included. But if not, then all it is the paper. That's all it is. So assuming that we accept the Garmi view, so okay, so there, this is what we're talking about. It sounds like this is the model for us. But it's like burning somebody's shtar. And if that's the case, it fits into a Garmi category. So then, according to Tosfos, Garmi only applies if it's something you can sell. A shtar, you can sell. We assume there is such a thing as mechira shtaros. It might be that that's only drabanan, the ability to sell a shtar. But that doesn't have to bother us because, okay, once it's drabanan, so it's possible to sell, and then that might make a difference. So maybe a shtar, fine, you could have sold a shtar. But picture, maybe not. So that's where, again, the Ktos makes the point that, okay, it's got to be sellable. Okay, so far so good? Still got 98 times to go. Let me do it again. But again, at the end, we'll also recap everything. Hopefully, it should be clear. So there again, Rav Zalman Nechemia and others don't agree with this, that here again, it could be that you need that in order for it to be given some value. But something that already has another way of giving itself value is not going to be in that category. And especially because Tosfos gives two other answers. So that's not the only approach in Tosfos. And the Shach Paskins like another answer, that it's all about other components involved with Kefel and the like, because there the case was somebody stole a shore. So the question is, does he have to pay Kefel? Does he have to pay Dali Behei? That's what we're talking about. But the Keren, the item itself, to be liable for damaging the item itself, maybe in a Hanami, maybe that would be. Maybe that would still fit into Garmi. So again, Rav Zalman Nechemia did not accept this proof, didn't accept the position of the Nesivos or the Ktos, and many Achronim don't accept that position. So the Sefer I showed you the other day, Mishpat HaMazik, it's a more halachal mois oriented Sefer, he has a sif about this, and he quotes in the footnotes a whole list of Achronim who also did not accept the Ktos and the Nesivos, and they maintain that even if something can't be sold, the Mazik could still be liable for it. Now that still prompts the question of, okay, so are we talking about, though, glasses, where we could put a number, we could say, how much does it cost him to now get new glasses? But sentimental value might still be a different category. How do you assess the value of something that is only sentimentally significant, and how do we know that there is a value? Maury, you got a question?
Maybe we did say this, but how come no one suggested just evaluating how much the person would pay for the
object? Yeah, that could be. And again, if you look at the Mishpat HaMazik, that's one of the possibilities. Happens to be Rizam Nechemia does not mention that possibility. He's a little bit at a loss. He says he's confident that there is a chiyuv, but not sure exactly how to assess it. And he says maybe you have to go to the auction houses, maybe you have to ask the experts to figure out, okay, what would you put on such a thing? What kind of value would you put on it? He's not sure what to use. He says if you look at something like glasses where there's a replacement cost, okay, so then that's the number. But if it doesn't have the possibility of being replaced, so he's only answering half the question. He thinks there is a liability. We have to figure out exactly how to assess it.
Sounds like self-evaluation would be just the best, worst option.
Well, the question is you have to be able to establish it somehow.
Right.
You know, you have to establish it credibly in Beis Din, because in Motzi Mechavero, you have to be able to...
Also assuming that paying back, let's say it doesn't market value, paying back the market value is enough. Like saying that's the restitution means that we don't care about the value.
No, we do, because we can't say the market value in the case of the glasses, because the replacement cost is what the guy needs. But in the case of the sentimental value item, we can't go to market value, because like we said, market value is nothing. So we have to have a different standard.
Well, like the case that we're discussing, a family portrait, there is material worth. It's minuscule compared to whatever the
Maybe close to nothing. I mean, would you, as much as that, like, you know, would you, we can print out your own picture of anything, so would you pay for somebody else's picture?
Depends what kind of picture I have in my
house. Okay, maybe. So if the picture happens to have aesthetic value, so then that could be true also, but it's not inherent in the question.
I mean, there's a cost to getting a picture.
Right, but is that a value to anyone else?
I'm saying there is an objective. Let's say I want to blow a picture up at Staples.
Right, because you want that, right? That's like the glasses. That's a cost that's relevant to you to get that happen, to get to make that. But if somebody else already did that and wants to sell it to you.
So because it's not a Mitzias Arnshach, the other person, we negate the.
Because not a what, sorry?
Meaning, like, he doesn't have a. You're not interested in, and you don't have to spend the $30 to blow the picture, so.
Right, so it doesn't have any value to anyone else. So that's, you know, we can't use that as the standard here. That's what really prompts the whole question to begin with, because it's not something anyone else would pay for. So how do we figure it out based on the owner and his sentimental issues? Now, you know, it could be that's a question for other experts, or it could be that maybe we do have some way of asking somebody, what would you pay to not have it taken away from you? Or maybe what you could do is you maybe take a survey of other people who have family pictures and say, okay, how much would you pay to not have this only copy of this destroyed? And use that as a standard. Hi.
I'm just curious, it might be not me on my side, but basically I was reading this article about this photographer who took a very, like a crazy, like once-in-a-lifetime picture of this couple, like from miles away, whatever. And so, like, at that point, and then he, like, the story was that he found the couple, he didn't know they were, and he found them again. But in a case like that, like, there's sentimental value, I assume, to both. Meaning, like, it's like a once in a lifetime photo, and it's also this unbelievable picture of this couple. So, like, how would that be assessed in this type of case?
Well, I mean, it's because who's the both here? I mean, the photographer. The
photographer is like a professional photographer.
Right. But why are their values pitted against each other?
Because it's not necessarily one side of sentimental value versus market value, it's two.
Right, but why does the photographer play? If you broke it, let's say, if you took it out of his camera and deprived him of it, so then what might be relevant is the value he puts on it, or potentially the value he could get for it, because it's also that there, it's a monetary value in his case, because he could potentially sell it or something, I guess that's the idea.
I don't know if he sold it.
But I think that's the potential value for it. If it doesn't contain content that he personally cares about, so its significance is that, I guess, he could sell it. So for him, it's a monetary. So if he's the Nizok, if he's the one who has it when it happens, so then you would use his framework. That might be a clearer case. But towards the subject of the picture, it's more sentimental. Now here there's an interesting machlokas. This is often quoted machlokas. Let's say I have a beautiful esrog that I paid a lot for, and I plan on using it for the mitzvah on Sukkos. And somebody is mazik, my esrog. So the Mishnah Melech quotes the machlokas about this. How much does the mazik have to pay? Because essentially, what did he deprive me of? Deprived me of the mitzvah of esrog. So according to the Maariminz, he just has to pay the value of an esrog. And he says that based on a Gemara Bava Kamma, which was also on our list. Now let's say somebody commits to bring a Korban Olah. So according to the Gemara, he could just bring a sheep for that. But he happens to set aside a shor. And now somebody comes and is mazik the shor. So what does he have to replace it with? So it's a machlokus in the Gemara. But the Gemara concludes that he only has to pay the cost of a sheep, because that would have been enough to fulfill my commitment. When I said I'm going to bring an Ola, and I committed this shore to the Ola, so now the shore can't do anything else because it's already now dedicated to the Ola. So my problem as the Makdish is I have to come through with my obligation. So the Mazik can say, okay, I'll help you come through with your obligation. Here's a sheep. So based on that, the Maariminz says, okay, so if somebody takes my esrog, even if it was a very expensive, beautiful esrog, he can say to me, all right, I deprived you of your ability to fulfill the mitzvah of esrog, so I'll get you a regular esrog to fix that. And the Chacham Tzvi disagreed. Chacham Tzvi said, no, Esrog is different because I can sell an esrog. So if it was a more expensive esrog, it should go by the more expensive price. And the case of the shor, I couldn't sell the shor anyway. So the only way to establish it is based on the replacement cost. And the replacement cost can be done with something less, so that's why he can get off with less. But the esrog is not only about replacing the mitzvah. I could sell it. It has value. So for that reason, the Chacham Tzvi disagrees with the Maharam Mintz. Everyone follow that? The Maharam Mintz, who the Mishnah Malach quotes. So far, so good? Everyone follow that? So Rabbi Zalman Nechemia writes, he says, I agree with the Chacham Tzvi, but for a different reason. I agree with the Chacham Tzvi that he should pay the price of a Mehudar Esrog, but not just because you could sell it and therefore let's use that as the metric. But there's a difference to the person in the mitzvah. The person who initially bought this expensive esrog did it because he didn't just want to fulfill a mitzvah and check off a box. It was important to him to do it behider. So you not only cost him a mitzvah, you cost him a mitzvah behider. So therefore, that should also be something that is actionable. The Chacham Tzvi. So therefore, you should have to pay for that too. This, the Chacham Tzvi takes the position, it's Reb Zalman Nechemia who's agreeing with him, but saying this additional svar. So he's agreeing that you should pay the full price, but he's saying that for a different reason. He's saying it because of the emotional value that a person had. I wanted to do a mitzvah min hamuvchar, and therefore, I should have to pay. So, bottom line, it seems like the majority of Achronim, and among them the authority of Zalman Nechemia, I believe, is the head of the Bezdin HaGadol Yerushalayim, so that's a pretty big voice here, seem to say that one is liable for being mazik, an item of sentimental value. The only question that's a little bit open still is to figure out how you assess it. So that may still have to be up to a Bezdin to determine. And it may be something that they may have to come to a settlement about. Just to give one footnote to this, it's interesting, we could possibly plug this in to the discussion that we were having in terms of Banksy and insurance and ask, what's the nature of the Chiyuv Tashlumin for Nizak? Is it to restore the item or is it to pay back the Hefzid? So if you recall, Reb Chaim's position was that it's to restore the item. So if that's the case, that actually helps for the glasses situation. It will lead us perhaps to a distinction between the glasses and the picture. We could say that for the glasses, okay, the Mazik's obligation is to restore the item. So it doesn't matter that what he broke doesn't have value in the marketplace. His mitzvah is to bring it back to what it was. So therefore, he should pay the cost of new glasses. It would seem that probably would flow pretty directly from that position. But maybe it would come out then that the sentimental value piece, you're basically stuck because really the mazik's job is to replace it. But it's impossible to replace. There's no option to replace it. So therefore, maybe the Reb Chaim would come out in that way, that we don't view it based on the loss to the Nizak, we view it based on the obligation to restore the picture, and because it's impossible to do, maybe he's left with nothing. But again, as far as the position that most Achronim have taken on this, I think that the position is that there is a Chiyuv, and to figure out what that Chiyuv is actually going to boil down to. Okay, so far so good, everything makes sense? All right, so let's just review. Again, I'll try to do it carefully because this was some tricky stuff. So to review what we spoke about today, and then our next plan is to stop here in terms of pre-Bechina material and Parsha tomorrow and the Chazara. Chazara will either start tomorrow at the end of Parsha or Sunday. But just to recap what we said today. So the question of, if something can't be sold in the store, is there a liability? And we had two different models of that. Either something that's too personalized to the owner, like glasses, which cause him a loss if they're broken, but he can't sell them before or after, so it's not so significant if that's the standard. Or a sentimental value item like a picture or your smicha document or whatever that's valuable to you but you can't sell. So we mentioned that the position of the ktsos and the nesivis was that if you can't sell it, there's no liability, and many other acharonim disagreed. So we mentioned first one proof of the nesivis, that the Gemara says that if somebody tries to frame a woman into a situation where she would have lost her ksuba, to assess the value of what they tried to do, we go based on what she could have gotten for selling it. So apparently, it's only what she could get for selling it, because the Gemara says if the money would have gone to her husband, it doesn't count. But what about the fact that she has it? She doesn't have to sell it to someone else. She has it herself. If it's worth something to the buyer, it's worth something to her too. So let's use that as the value. So says the Nesivis, apparently if you can't sell it, it doesn't count. So if she could have sold it to someone else, so then that has value. If she can't sell it, even though she has that item, then it doesn't count. So Reb Zalman Nechemya didn't like that proof. Others objected as well. And one point was that there, the ksuba has no value except for that either it is activated or you could sell it. But if neither of those things are happening, it's actually worthless. But a picture or something like that, maybe you can't sell it, but you don't need that to give it value. It has value by its own existence, and therefore we don't have to look at the question of whether you could sell it or not. And then we saw also the question of davar hagorim lamama, and the example of, let's say, somebody is watching a shor, it ends up becoming a shor haniskal, and then a ganav steals it from him, so now because it got stolen, he's going to have a hard time satisfying his obligation to give it back to the original owner, so it's going to cost him money. It's a gurim lamamon. So it's a machlokas in the Gemara what the story is. But it seems like it's different than garmi. It's different than the case where somebody causes something to happen in a direct enough way that we charge him for that. So why are they not the same? So one answer Tosfos gives is that garmi is the thing that you can sell that's relevant to other people. So, says the Ktsos, here you have it, you can't sell it. We don't even use Garmi as a standard. And Garmi might have been the standard, because perhaps you can compare this to the Gemara about burning someone's shtar, where the Gemara says that if you don't accept Garmi, then even though now this guy can't collect his debt, there's no value here more than just the paper. But if you accept Garmi, okay, so then there's something to account for here. So probably the picture is like the shtar. So it's a garmi is probably the right model. So is Tosfos saying we don't apply garmi if you can't sell it? So again, says Reb Zalman Nechemya, no. If it has actual value, so then it would be subject to garmi. If it has value even determined emotionally. But if it doesn't have that, then it only gets its value by being able to be sold. And that's why the distinction is there. And that's how Dam Nechemi assumes, and he points out the Shach also would be consistent with that, because he passed like another answer in Tosfos. So it seems like Garmi is probably a relevant model here. You have caused somebody to have emotional loss. So how do we assess what that is? That's the question. So we mentioned a couple possibilities. Either you could assess it based on what the person would have paid to not have this happen, but you'd have to figure out how to prove that. Or maybe you have to go to some kind of expert and have it evaluated, how you factor in all these things. But once you figure out what the number is, Reb Zalman Nechemya and others felt there is a liability for this case. And then we talked about the question, if somebody buys a Mohuter Esrog and somebody else is Mazikit, so according to the Mara Mintz, he just has to replace a basic esrog, because he just deprived him of the mitzvah. So it's like the Gemara about somebody who takes upon himself an ola and separates a shor for that, and then somebody comes and is mazik the shor. So it's a back and forth in the Gemara, but the conclusion is he just has to replace it with a sheep, a minimal amount, in order to fulfill his obligation. So that was the view of the Meir Mintz, and the Chacham Tzvi said, no, the Esrog is different. The Esrog he could sell in the store, so we go by the full Mahudr value, as opposed to the shore, that was stolen after it was Hekdish. Can't sell that, it's Hekdish. So that's a different story. So Rabzam Lechemya said he agrees with the Chacham Tzvi for a different reason, not because he could sell it, but there's value to the emotional component. The person who bought the Mahudr Esrog, he didn't just want to have the mitzvah, he wanted to have the mitzvah behidr. That was important to him. So to deprive him of that, that's something that's significant, and therefore you should have to pay for all of that. You should have to pay for what he paid for the Mahudr Esrog. And then we just added on to this, that this could perhaps fit into the question we've been talking about in the previous discussions, that is it about replacing the item or is it about addressing the loss? If it's about replacing the item, so then that may help in terms of not looking at the market price, but rather looking at what it takes to replace it. And that seemed to be the view of Reb Chaim that we saw in the previous discussions. But here there's going to be a big distinction. So the prescription glasses, that you can replace. So that helps. Okay, don't look at the market value, but look at what it costs to replace it. Okay, we can find out what it costs to replace it. But the picture, there is no way to replace it. So then the question is, what do you do? So maybe you're just stuck. Maybe it's an onus that really you're obligated to fix it, but there's nothing you can do to fix it. No amount of money is going to do it. So maybe essentially you're onus in that case. But that still brings us back to the bottom line, that even within that view, presumably there's a lefnim mishur sadin or a chiyuv b'day shamayim to work it out, which was Mori suggested yesterday, and presumably that's a viable path here as well, that at a minimum it seems like there is a moral responsibility, and if there's a moral responsibility, so then you have to ask Mechila, and if you have to ask Mechila, the victim has the right to say, you have to fix this somehow, and we'll have to come to an agreement of what that means to fix it in order to address his issues. Okay, any questions about this? Any issues? All right, so God willing, tomorrow, Chai Sara, maybe Chazara, we'll see. And God willing, Sunday, I think we said it's 11:30 is the space in between the programs, so we'll do it then. Who's diving for us?
You got up first. So.